So we left off last week, still kind of going through a little bit of the historical background of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. We still find ourselves in Perek Beis, Mishnah Ches. So remember, again, just to reorient ourselves a little bit, in last week's classes, we spoke much more about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's evolution from Rav in the Upper Galilee to coming to Yerushalayim, becoming one of the most prominent and prolific Torah scholars and teachers. Remember again, we saw how incredibly, even though Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has a Beis Medrash, the Beis Medrash was not large enough to go ahead and contain him and his Talmidim on Yom Tiv. Where did they learn during the Regalim? Outdoors in the shade of the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. Incredible. So with that, we saw also, we spent, I think, last class really focusing on source number 7, which is the episode with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and his nephew Abba Sikra. We left off again with the dramatic discussion regarding whether or not Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did the right thing. When he comes face to face with Vespasian, again he asks for 3 things. What were the 3 things? Number 1, Tainli Yavne v'chachamehau, give me the city of Yavne. What does it mean, Tainli Yavne v'chachamehau? What was he asking for? Sanhedrin. Why? Continuity. Remember, again, preservation of the Masorah. Number 2, Shushiltas Rabbi Gamliel. Why? Because, again, Davidic line, preservation of the Messianic future. And number 3, Adakt Rabbi Tzadok. So that one, again, we'll have to see why that, why Rabbi Tzadok out of everyone else, why that's Rabbi Tzadok. Again, we'll see that a little bit later on. So remember, again, we left off with the major question, did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai do the right thing or not? So what's the answer? We don't know. Clearly, again, we saw in the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yosef, were very upset at him. They felt that he blew it, that he missed a major opportunity to potentially save Yerushalayim, save the Jewish people, at least at this particular point in time. But as we say, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had to make the best decision he was capable of making in the time, given the circumstances as he perceived them. You could always look back and you could always second guess the decisions that you make. We all have decisions that we look back on and we say, I should have done this, I should have done that. But then I realized at the time that I made the decision, I made the best decision I knew how to make at the time with the information I had at my disposal. And again, as we mentioned, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, this episode of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai not knowing what to do. So I remember, this is not just unique to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. This type of indecision or ambiguity has been happening since when? Right, which occurred when? When did Nevuah essentially stop? By Churban, really again, already by Churban Bayis Rishon. Already again, that really represents the close of the period of Nevuah. We know this because what's the first major story in Tanakh we have after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash? Purim, Megillas Esther. What's missing in Megillas Esther? Hashem's name. Now again, remember, there are Nevi'im. There are Nevi'im, to be clear. But the notion of Nevuah as guiding us through the difficult steps of life, that we don't have as much. Remember again, the whole story of Purim is Mordechai comes to Esther. Remember again, did we discuss this last class? Okay, so remember, Mordechai comes to Esther after Haman goes ahead and put out the decree to Lahashmid Laharog La'abid Es Kol HaYehudim. And he comes to Esther. What does he say to Esther? What does Mordechai say to Esther? What does he want her to do? Go to the king. You know the story. Go to the king. Plead on behalf of the people. And Esther essentially responds, no. She doesn't say no straight out, but she essentially says no. It's a nice no. It's, you know, I wasn't summoned. She says no. And remember, what does Mordechai respond to her? Umi odea im la'is kazo sigat malchus. If you notice, who knows? Maybe this is the reason that you became queen. Remember, what doesn't Mordechai say? This, by the way, is exceptionally important. Mordechai does not say that this is the reason you... It's so clear. The Hashkach is so clear. The reason you became queen is so that you could save the Jewish people. Mordechai doesn't say that. Mordechai says, Miodeo. Maybe this is the reason you became queen. Maybe this is the reason that you were placed. Why can't he say anything definitive? Because he doesn't know. I just want to digress for just a moment. This is incredibly important to understand, that with the close of Nevuah, we don't know why things occur. And I'm bringing this up because this is contemporarily relevant, because, you know, Klal Yisrael suffered a horrible tragedy a week ago last Shabbos with the murder of innocent Jews in Pittsburgh, the worst anti-Semitic event in the history of the Jewish people's existence here in North America. And there were some people who espoused certain things, putting forward a knowledge of why things occur. They occur because of this. And anyone who ever tries to tell you that they know, especially why tragic events occur, it's reckless and irresponsible. If Mordechai HaTzadik, who was one of the members of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, can't tell Esther, I don't know why this is happening. And again, we look at the Megillah, and when we read the story, it's so clear to us that, of course, Esther became the queen to be able to save the Jewish people. And one can make that. But again, we don't know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu does things. We don't know why, in the aftermath of Nevuah, with the close of Nevuah, we don't understand the Ratzon Hashem, nor do we have a Navi to interpret those words. So there were some, I'm sure, very well-meaning Rabbanim who said things, giving insight as to why terrible tragedies occurred and why innocent people were murdered. And it's reckless, irresponsible, arrogant, and most probably wrong, because it presupposes a knowledge of why HaKadosh Baruch Hu does things, and with the close of Nevuah, we don't have that. Anyone who therefore espouses reasoning essentially is proclaiming themselves as a Navi. If you're proclaiming yourself as a Navi, there are other problems. So again, I'm just pointing out, this is already happening before Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is not the first person to go ahead and deal with this indecision or deal with this ambiguity. This has been happening since the Purim story in different ways. It's just, it was a pivotal moment for Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And whereas in the past, you would have consulted the Navi, you would have consulted the Urim Batumim, you would have had Ruach HaKodesh, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai doesn't have that. And so he has to make the best decision he's able to make in the circumstances he has, with the information as he understands it, and with the circumstances as he sees it. Yes?
So about last week, what you said, that maybe my father told me in the Gemara, it says that this Fajan would have agreed to the request of sparing Yerushalayim, but Hashem didn't want that to happen, so he put it into blocked out from, he made Rabbi Yochanan think that he won't listen to it, and therefore he needs to.
So it's interesting. So meaning the pasuk that the Gemara quotes is from Yeshaya, which is Meshiv Chachamim Akar V'Datam Yisokel, which means exactly that. That he turns around the wisdom of the wise, and V'Datam Yisokel corrupts their wisdom. So there's a dispute as to how to read the Gemara. So some explain it as your father gave a beautiful explanation. Tell him I say hello, by the way, please. So, you know, but just so you should understand, Pashup Shat is not like that. Because remember, if that was the truth, and again, you'll look, that's mamish the pasuk that the Gemara is quoting. Why does that not seem to be the regular pshat in the Gemara? Because if that was true, then what? Why is Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yosef getting angry? You know what I'm saying? Meaning the one point that is this, meaning, had Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Akiva not gotten angry, we would have just assumed, listen, this was the hashkacha, this is what he was supposed to do. But you have to somehow contend with Rabbi Akiva. And remember again, Rabbi Akiva, what was Rabbi Akiva's dominant midah? Right? Rabbi Akiva was known as an incredible Olav Yisrael. Rabbi Akiva was not the one always getting angry. Right? Rabbi Akiva was the one who was melamed tzchusup. For Rabbi Akiva to get angry, and in such a wrathful way, to ultimately, so he didn't see a hashgacha. I mean, of course he saw hashgacha in it, but he didn't see the Ribbono Shel Olam blocking Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's mind. He saw Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai making a bad decision. So again, there are multiple, and I know this triggered our whole discussion about Emuna and hashgacha. You know, we're actually going to come back to some of these elements, because as you're going to see, by the way, some of these in Yalam of Emuna, which is, I didn't even think that we were going to get into this here, but we're actually going to see them figure into the Mishnah. So I'm very happy that the topic came up. But again, I'm just pointing out that the tension we feel over here of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai making the correct decision is a function of living in a world without nevuah. In a world without nevuah, in a world without a Beis HaMikdash, there's ambiguity. There's a lack of clarity. And so sometimes life, you have to make decisions and you just don't know if they're the right ones. Yes?
How come a lot of times when there's a tragedy, like Big Rabbanim would say, we all have to work on
sin? You have to ask the Big Rabbanim.
I
don't understand when people say things like that, to be very honest. I don't understand. And I'll tell you, I don't understand it on two levels. Because to me, if I was a woman and someone said that to me, there's a big tragedy, we have to work on sneers. So the way I understand that is, so you're telling me then that part of what's happened is because I'm not sanua enough? Is that how HaKadosh Baruch Hu... Now again, I don't know how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs his world. I don't know. There's a concept that when there is a tragedy, yifashvesh b'ma'asav. This is true on a personal level and a global level. So if something goes ahead and happens to me that's negative, I might not know why it happened, but I have an obligation to introspect, to see what in my life can I do better. Now, I might find I speak too much Lashon Hara, I'm not honest in business, and I eat treif. So I have to work on three things. I don't do those things, I just want to be clear, right? But I have to work on those things. Does that mean that the bad thing happened because of those things? This tzaddik v'ralo, rasha v'tovlo. Things happen for a variety of reasons that are beyond our comprehension. So anytime there's a tragedy, personal or national, I have to introspect and figure out how do I grow from it. That's always a proper message. So if someone says there's a tragedy in Klal Yisrael, we have to go ahead and figure out how we can be better. Okay, we should always focus on how we be better in tragedy, but we have to be very careful about linking things. To be very careful to say, this happened, and therefore this is a siman from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we have to do this better. That, I think, is a very, very, very dangerous message. And personally, I don't feel it's correct. So I think everything is how it's messaged and everything is how it's managed. Every tragedy, every life event is a springboard for personal growth and betterment. But to link, to say this happened because of this, I think one has to be very careful. Yes?
I heard a rabbi say that the reason people say to work on sneas after tragedy is because sneas is like the word shmira, just like Torah's invention there. So it's not because of...
Right. Beautiful. It's beautiful. So if it comes with that explanation and it's understood that, again, we don't know why things happen, but this is the springboard for personal... Fantastic. Remember, the beauty of our people is that we grow from everything. We grow from simcha, we grow from tzara. Meaning, if you want to know what Judaism's approach is to any life situation, it's always very simple. Growth, growth, growth. How do we grow from it? But again, one just has to be careful to set, but this is just my opinion, and you could feel free to disagree, and I'm sure many others disagree. I just think we always have to be careful to stay away from saying, this happened because we have to be better in this. That type of linkage, I think, is very dangerous, and I think sometimes may be a bit uninformed. And we see that from Yochanan ben Zakkai, we see it from Mordechai and Esther. Since the close of Nevuah, what we lack most is the ability to create the intercorrelation between certain events. We try to grow, we try to use it as a springboard for personal elevation, national elevation, but don't necessarily understand the deeper meaning or reasoning behind the events. This, by the way, is a much bigger discussion. And there's a lot to be said about this. This is the Gemara Maseches Brachos that brings down that whenever something happens, yifashvesh b'ma'asov. So there's a whole discussion about what pishpush b'ma'asov means. What does it mean to introspect? What does it mean to look? Does it mean looking for reasons? Does it mean looking for growth? Or maybe when it comes closer to Purim, we'll analyze a little bit more from the Megillah. So let's take a look at number 8. So bottom line is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did what he felt was the necessary and proper course of action. As a result, of course, Vespasian grants Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's 3 wishes, but unfortunately, Yerushalayim is destroyed. And then number 8, the Gemara says, Avos Rabbi Nosson says, Ba'osa Shah, Nilkada Yerushalayim. In that moment, Yerushalayim was destroyed. V'hayi Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Yoshev u'mitzapeh. V'charid kiderech shahaya eli Yoshev u'mitzapeh shene emar. V'hine eli Yoshev alakisei. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, apparently, it sounds like he was not necessarily in Yerushalayim at the time it was destroyed. Which actually couldn't make a lot of sense. It could very well be that he couldn't go back into the city afterwards, after he pulled, remember, he tricked the Baryonim. So it could be that it would not have been wise for his health and longevity to go back into the city. It's also possible that he just went to Yavne because that's where the Sanhedrin was located. But in any event, he was not there. Kevan Sheshama, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Shehechriv Es Yerushalayim, V'saraf Es Beis HaMikdash, V'saraf Es Beis HaMikdash Ba'ish, Kara Begadav, V'karu Tamidav Es Begdehem, V'yibokhin V'tzakin V'soktin. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai hears about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, his reaction, the reaction of his Tamidim, tearing their clothing, mourning and crying out. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is one of these very interesting personalities, in that he occupies a leadership position, both when the Beis HaMikdash was standing, during the Churban, and after the Churban. This puts him in a very, very unique leadership position. So I remember again, and he also knows the fact, remember going back to the fact that he doesn't ask Vespasian to spare Yerushalayim, indicates to us what? That he knew the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed. He knew Jewish life was going to be disrupted. So he has to lead the Jewish people as they approach Churban, during Churban, and in the aftermath of Churban. So if you look at number nine begins Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's leadership in the post Churban era. So remember again, during the Churban itself, how would you illustrate Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's leadership? What type of leadership does he demonstrate during the Churban? Or I should say, immediately preceding entering into the Churban? What would you say? I'm sorry? So first of all, we see him crying, we see him mourning. So obviously, it's not even joining in their pain, it's his pain also. His pain also. Leading up to the Churban, remember in his episode or in his encounter with Vespasian, what is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai trying to do? He's planning for the future. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai realizes, you know what, it's almost like, when I was in Eretz Yisrael during the summer, and I took my children to the ocean. So my little ones love the ocean a lot and love the waves. So I told them, you know, there's an incredible Musa from Rabbi Akiva in the Gemara. Rabbi Akiva says that one time I was traveling, you know, the famous Maaser, Rabbi Akiva says one time I was traveling by boat, and there was the water was very turbulent, broke apart my boat, and I held onto the Daf Shalsin, I held onto the board. And he said, what happened? Every single time a big wave came, Na'anisi Es Roshi, I bowed my head, and I let the wave sweep over me. So I was telling my children, you know, because they like to jump over the waves. I said, what do you do in that moment when you realize you're not going to make it jumping over the waves? So you have two choices. What are your two choices? Number one. No one's ever been to the ocean. Just learning all day. Fantastic. What do you do? Well, right. So first option is you could just stand where you are. Right? What happens if you stand where you are? So remember again, the greater the surface area, meaning the more erect your posture is, so the greater the intensity of the wave smashing against you. Or you bend into the wave. You could jump into the wave, you could just bend your head. So what's going to happen when you bend your head over the wave? So it'll go over you. Now what happens to you? You go under the water. Meaning again, so at the end of the day, the water washes over you. And it may even pull you down a little bit. But it doesn't drag you back with it. Rabbi Akiva, it's an incredible metaphor for life. Sometimes you jump over the waves. And if you're smart enough and you get far enough and you position yourself in the right way, you could avoid the waves and you could just glide right over them and it's perfect. Sometimes, because of a variety of reasons, you will not get over that wave. That wave is going to smash into you. So at that point in time, you have a choice. You have a couple of choices. You could turn away from the wave and what? Pretend like it's not happening. Right? And just ignore it. And that works fine until when? Until it knocks you over. Right? You could choose to face it and just stare it down and not do anything. And that's fine until it knocks you over. Or you could accept the fact that you're not getting over this wave and try to figure out the right way to manage it with the least amount of collateral damage. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sees the wave of Churban coming upon Klal Yisrael. There have been many waves before that, and Baruch Hashem, all of them we're able to jump the wave, right? We're able to jump over it. This wave, he sees, we're not escaping. This wave will come crashing down on Yerushalayim, on Am Yisrael. So what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says is, bend your head. Bend your head, right? You know, go ahead, get into the fetal position, let the wave wash over you. You're gonna be pulled under the water for a little bit of time, but if you manage it correctly, you'll be able to get back up. That's the three requests from Vespasian, all about bending your head in front of the impending wave. Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. More than 1 million Jews die during the Roman conquest of Yerushalayim. Now we come in number 9 to the aftermath of Churban. The Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. You know, when we speak about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so the truth is, for us, we speak about it in a relatively dispassionate way. Why? Because it's been gone for 2,000 years. So, okay, of course, on a neshamadik level, of course I miss the Beis HaMikdash. And on a ruchni level, of course I feel an absence. My neshama feels an absence, even if I physically do not feel an absence. But for this generation, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's generation, they experienced life with a Beis HaMikdash and now have to live life without a Beis HaMikdash. That is profoundly traumatic. So look at number 9. Kishecharav habayis v'shnia. When the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Rabu Perushin b'Yisrael, shelo le'echol basar for shelo lishtos yayin. So what happens? When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so Rabu Perushin, what does that word parush mean? Separate. Separate. This word is going to be very important. By the way, you're going to see, we're not going to see it in this class, but I'm sure if you've learned any Jewish history, there have been a number of groups throughout history who have been called Prushim. Right? Who else is called Prushim? Right? The followers of the Gaon. The followers of the Vilna Gaon were often called Prushim. So again, the phrase or the name comes from here, comes from this Gemara. So Rabu Prushin b'Yisrael. Now again, Prushin literally means separatists. Why are they called separatists? Because they decided shelo le'achol basar v'shelo lishtos yayin. They decided they were no longer going to eat meat, no longer going to eat wine. Why not? Mourning. So remember again, the halacha is a mourner permitted to eat meat and wine? An avel? The answer is yes and no. In halacha, there are two different stages of mourning. There's what's called aninos and avelos. Aninos is the period between death and burial. So during that period of time, so an what we call an onein, which we loosely translate as a mourner, everything translates as a mourner, onein is not permitted to eat meat and wine. But yet after burial, for the course of Shiva, the avel could eat as much meat and as much wine as they want. Why the distinction? Why the distinction? So it's an interesting halachic issue. Chazal were concerned that if we let the onein drink wine and eat meat, what might happen? Think about this for just a moment. What are you able to accomplish with wine? Good, you answered that too quickly, but good, right? Right, good, right? A person could go ahead and drown their sorrows in wine, right? The person. So Chazal were concerned that what might happen if an onein will go ahead and be able to drink wine, then chas v'shalom, the onein might get drunk and neglect to take care of the burial needs of their loved one. So because that Chazal said, no meat, no wine during aninus, but there is no such restriction during avelos. So something very interesting occurs over here, that these prushim, these individuals decided not to eat meat and not to drink wine. So nitpaleh and Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua engages them and he says, Bonai, so listen to this. So yes, and what are you guys doing? Why are you not eating meat? Why are you not drinking wine? So Amrulo, they said to him that Nuchal Buster Shemimenu Makriven Agabe Mizbeach Va'achshav Bottle. Nishte Yayin Sheminaskin Agabe Hamizbeach Va'achshav Bottle. So what do they answer back to him? What do they answer back? How can we eat meat if there are no karbanos? In other words, what they were saying was, how could we enjoy meat when Kiviyachol, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Mizbeach, the Beis HaMikdash, is quote-unquote not enjoying meat. How can we drink wine when there is no wine being poured on the Mizbeach? So what they're asking over here is, if there's no meat and there's no wine being used in a sacrificial context in the Beis HaMikdash, so how is it appropriate for us to enjoy it on a mundane level? Okay, so Rabbi Yoshua responds to them. If that's the case, Amar Lahem, Im Kein, Lechem Lo Nochal, Shekvar Bitlu Menachos. So he says to them, well, if that's the case, then you shouldn't eat bread. Why shouldn't you eat bread? Why not? Because remember, now Menachos means two things. Menachos means Lechem Aponim. And remember again, there was also a Karban Mincha. The Karban Mincha was often offered up, the Kohen Gadol offers up what's called the Minchas Chavitin, which was a Karban that was offered up twice a day, once in the morning, once in the evening. It was made from flour. So Rabbi Yoshua says to them, I don't understand. If that's the case, if you guys are saying that essentially anything that we can no longer do in the Beis HaMikdash, we shouldn't do in our private lives as well, so why are you stopping at meat and wine? You also should not eat any bread, because there's no longer lechem aponim or menachos being offered up in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Prushim say back to him, Efshar Beperos. Right? Fine. So the Prushim say, you're right. We won't eat meat. We won't drink wine. We won't eat bread. What will we eat? Peros. We'll eat fruit. Now, the problem is, obviously, Rabbi Yoshua is trying to make a point. And clearly the Prushim are missing the point. At this point in time, who steps in? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Now watch this exchange. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, Peros lo nochal. My children, you can't eat peros either. Why can't you eat fruit? Why can't you eat fruit? Using the such, why can't you eat fruit? Bikurim. Shekvar bitlu bikurim. Right? After Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, Prushim. If you're essentially saying that you can't eat meat, you can't drink wine, you can't eat bread, because these are all things that are done in the Beis HaMikdash, and there's no longer a Beis HaMikdash, so you can't eat fruit either, because there's no longer Bikurim. So the Prushim respond back, you're right. Efshar beperos acherim. You're right. We can eat other fruit. What does it mean we can eat other fruit? Right, remember again, Bikurim are only brought from the Sheva Saminim, the seven unique indigenous species, Teret Yisrael. We'll eat other fruit, we'll eat apples, oranges, other things. There's plenty of other things to eat. So if that's the case, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, you know what? Mayim lo nishtem. The truth is you shouldn't drink water. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, why not? Shekvar bital niseh hamayim. Because remember again, niseh hamayim, which was done when? Sukkis, right? Simchas Beis HaShoeva. You shouldn't drink water either. Because after all, if water is not being offered up on his back, then you shouldn't drink water. Now at this point in time, what happens? Shasku. Shasku means what? So the Prushim were quiet. Now why were they quiet? Because they realized the flaw in their logic. Meaning all of Yochanan ben Zakkai was trying to do is trying to go ahead and show them the flaw in their logic. Now, there's a lot to be said about this exchange. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai could have just shut it down from the beginning, but he doesn't do that. Instead, what does he do? All right, he goes to the whole thing. What does this teach you? This, by the way, is an incredible idea in conflict resolution. Right? What does it teach you about conflict resolution? What do you have to do? If you're in a conflict with someone, and you want to resolve conflict, what do you have to do? So you have to talk it out, and you also have to be able to see the side of the other. We're going to see in just a moment what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's shita and hashkafa is in these things. But if you notice again, he doesn't just blurt it out immediately. He goes through the process with them. When people come to a particular opinion through a particular perspective, you have to validate and try to understand their perspective and not just shut them down and go ahead and espouse your own view. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai understands that what these people are doing is motivated from what? Why are the Prushim doing this? They're mourning. This is coming from a holy place. This is not a shtick. This is not just something they dream. Meaning, this is coming from pain. This is coming from profound pain over the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai understands, I don't want them to stop. I just want them to rechannel that energy towards somewhere else. But if I shut them down and don't talk it out with them, then they won't understand the error in their ways and the logic in mine. It's an incredible, incredible idea that sometimes we have disagreements with people and we're so unwilling to hear the other side. Why am I unwilling to hear the other side? Why? Because I'm right, of course. Right? Of course I'm right. And sometimes we are right. But even if you're right, if you want to reach the right kind of resolution, you have to find the patience and the ability to hear people out, to talk it out. Otherwise, you'll never be able to come to a real resolution. So what does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai say? This is amazing. He says, Amar lahem banai. So the first thing he says, my children, bo'u va'amar lahem. Let's talk this out. Let me explain to you what my logic is. Shelo lehis avel kol ikar efshar. What does that mean? Shelo lehis avel kol ikar efshar. To not mourn at all is what? Impossible. Shekvar nigzra gzera. How can we not mourn? How can we not mourn over that which we have lost? Ulehis avel yoser midai efshar. What does that mean? To mourn too much is also impossible. Why? Why? Because, well said, because you won't have a life. In other words, mourning, the power of mourning is mourning can be immobilizing. I want to go back for just a moment. Remember, what was the first thing that the Prushim started with? The first thing they started with? Meat and wine. Remember again, what's the halacha? When is important? When can't a person eat meat and wine? During what we call, what do we call that state? Aninus. By the way, there's another function of aninus. What else is the halacha during aninus? An avel is pater from all mitzvos, which essentially says that aninus is a time where there is no dynamic spiritual activity. There's no growth. There's no. It's an amazing thing. Which is, I know I'm speaking out of two sides of my mouth. What did we just say before? The Jewish response to every situation is growth, 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 except when it's not. Except apparently Chazal said there's a period of aninus, there's a period of time where no growth, no mitzvos. But you know, it's an interesting halacha. It's an interesting halacha. Can an onin do mitzvos if he or she wants to? No. Can I go? It's a machlokas in halacha. But the way we pass is generally we tell an onin, don't do mitzvos. Even if you want to. The burial needs are all arranged. No. An onin is part of our mitzvos. There's a lot about the hashkafa in this also. Some say we don't make the onin do mitzvos because sometimes after loss, a person doesn't feel close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if it's a tragic loss, a person may even be upset at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To force a person to serve God when they may feel alienated or upset at God is unhealthy. So Chazal gave you the space to heal. But on a basic level, what's happening over here is that there is a period of time where Chazal say we recognize that you are filled with pain, you're filled with sadness, and you don't have the ability to move yourself forward. What were the Prushim doing? Or what were the Prushim trying to do? Right? What they were trying to do is something amazing. They were essentially saying that the state of Klal Yisrael now, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, is that we are in a state of what? Aninus. Meaning when they said, don't eat meat and don't drink wine, what we are saying is we're oninin. We're aninos. We're aninos. By the way, what's the big difference between aninos and avelos? What's the close of aninos, beginning of avelos? Burial. Why burial? What does burial represent? What? Closure. Excellent. Burial represents closure. I want to say something is amazing. You know, if you've ever, unfortunately, been to a levaya, so if you'll notice again, Jewish funerals are dramatically different than non-Jewish funerals. So anyone know how Jewish funerals differ than non-Jewish funerals? A number of differences. Number one, so first of all, no showing of the body, which again is a din in kavod ames. Absolutely. What about in the kavura itself? So if you'll ever notice again, Jewish funerals don't have flowers. You don't have flowers by graves, generally. Again, there's nothing wrong with putting flowers by a stone if you want to, but as part of the kvura, we don't have flowers. Not only that, when you show up at a levaya, it's very stark. What do you see in front of you? What do you see in front of you, Rahman al-Islam? What do you see? There's a hole in the ground, there's a pile of earth, and there are shovels. By non-Jewish levayas, very often what they have is the casket sits on top of the grave, the earth is covered, and there are no shovels in sight. When does the burial occur? Fascinating. When everyone goes home. What happens by levaya? Our levaya is no one goes home until when? Until the burial is done. Why the difference? So, you know, in the Welt, in society, sometimes the goal is to make it as undeath-like as possible. That's why, again, you'll find beautiful caskets. You'll find, you know, everything looks beautiful. No dirt inside the casket is there. It's sitting there. There's a beautiful wreath. It's there. Everything looks beautiful, pure, and pristine. In Yiddishkeit, we deal with it. It's a hole in the ground. The body of my loved one is going to be put in there. I'm never going to see them again. How do I know that I'm not going to see them again? Because if you've ever been to a levaya, I do unfortunately a lot of levayas, and so I often feel the greatest musr in life is the sound of the first shovel full of dirt hitting the aron. That is the sound of finality. That is the sound that what has happened cannot be changed. Until Mashiach comes, this is the way that it is. The entire Judaic burial practice is set up to highlight the finality of circumstances. This is it. V'haraya, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, that you know, an avil could say whatever they want. An avil could say, I'm angry with God, I'm upset with God, I can't believe this happened. But the Shulchan Aruch says, there is one thing in that an avil is not permitted to say, which is, if I could change this, I would. An avil is not permitted to say those words. Why is an avil not permitted to say those words? Because you can't. Because you can't change it. Because no matter how much you want to change these circumstances, no matter how much you would give anything to bring your loved one back, you cannot. And so to spend time focusing on something which is an impossibility is an exercise in futility and using your kochos in all the wrong way. You see, during Aninus, Chazal understood that the finality of your circumstances has not necessarily hit. Therefore, again, there is no obligation for dynamic spiritual growth when you have not come to terms with your new reality. Once Kavura happens, that is the finality. New life, new world, new circumstances. Once you accept that finality, then you have the ability to what? To move forward and build a new life for yourself. What's happening over here is something amazing. The Prushim want to live in a state of aninus. The Prushim say it is impossible to recover from the debilitating blow of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It is impossible, right? Eich nashir asher, how can we go on? How can we possibly go on? How can we possibly move forward? This is a national state of aninus. And if you were to ask the Prushim, okay, so when does the aninus end? What would they say? Third Beis HaMikdash, it'll end. When Mashiach comes, when we have a new Beis HaMikdash, ultimately again, Aninus will end and we'll go back to being a vibrant, dynamic people. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes along and he says, my dear children, we cannot live in a state of Aninus. You could be an Onin for a couple of hours. You could even be an Onin for a day. But you can't continue life in a state of Aninus. Because what do we accomplish in a state of aninus? Nothing. Nothing happens in a state of aninus. It is a spiritual holding pattern. There is no movement forward. There is nothing to do. There is no growth. There are no dreams. There are no aspirations. It is a holding pattern where all you do is lose yourself in your grief. And by the way, Chazal understood that people need that. You need that. You need time to process. You need time to comprehend. You need time to understand. You need time to wrap your head around the enormity of how your life has changed. You know, loss is the most disorienting experience in the world. You know, there's an interesting minug by Avelos. You know, the minug of Avelos is that when a person comes to shul, this more often comes up with men than it does with women. But when a person comes to shul the first Shabbos after, even when they're sitting Shiva, there's an interesting halacha, which is they move their seat. Even if you have a makom kavua, you move your seat. Why do you move your seat? What's the logic behind that? So the Geshe Chaim, which is one of the authoritative sermon on Hilchos Aveilos, says, because you know when you have a makom kavua, when you have a set seat, so you see everything around you in a certain way. Your vantage point is a certain way. Death is disorienting. Loss is disorienting. The world doesn't look as it did. Life doesn't look as it did. My relationships are different. Everything is different. Everything is different. So Chazal give a physical form to that by telling you, Avel, sit somewhere else. Because your view of everything around you has now shifted, has now changed. That's how it is. It's disorienting. So the Prushin feel we live life in a state of aninus. Absence of the Beis Hamikdash, it's not even avelus. It's not even avelus. It's aninus. To Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, my dear children, we cannot live like that. Because if we remain in a state of aninus, then our story comes to an end right here, right now. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says like this, let's talk this out. To live life in a state of aninus, that we can't do. That we cannot do. Because if that's the case, here is the end of the road. To mourn excessively, to live in a state of aninus, that we can't do either. Right? I'm sorry. To not mourn at all, that's to ignore the enormity of our circumstances. That we can't do either. So what should we do? Listen to this. He goes on, he says, skip down a little bit. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I want to introduce a new series of laws. A new series of halachos. Watch this. I'm in number 9, 2, 4, 6, 8 lines are from the bottom. Get ready for this. Sad Adamas Beso Besid. When a person plasters his home, paints his home, he should leave a space unfinished. How much unfinished? Umahi, Amra Papa. I'm sorry. Amra Yosef, Akama, how much? Amma al Amma. A 1 amma by 1 amma space unfinished. That when you finish your home, leave a space unfinished. Why do you have to leave a space unfinished? Zecher l'churba. Now, just as an aside, so of course you see this all the time in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz La'aretz, you see it much less. That's for a variety of different reasons. Some of the poskim explain that the din was only in Eretz Yisrael. It was not in Chutz La'aretz. Others explain that it was dafka sid. It was dafka, this type of lime or plaster, which was bright white, that they used to go ahead and use to plaster their homes. It was never a din in regular paint like we have it today. So if you don't see it or you don't have it in your home, you're not in a violation of halacha. Don't worry. Meaning there are plenty of opinions who hold that just in Chutz La'aretz, it just never took the same way. I'll tell you something very interesting. Other poskim will hold that the din is that just at the entranceway of your home, you're supposed to have something that reminds you of Yerushalayim, of the Beis HaMikdash. So it doesn't even have to be an empty space. If you have an Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim sign, that's enough also. A picture of Yerushalayim, that's enough also. Something. So again, I'm just pointing out, this halacha is in effect in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz La'aretz, there's a whole machlokes aposkim. In any event, Rav Chista Amar, can I get a Pesach? Rav Chista says it should be right when you walk into your house. That the first thing you see when you walk into your home is that amma by amma, that unfinished space. Furthermore, Osa Adam Kol Tzarchei Suda, another halacha. When a person prepares a meal, so you prepare a meal, go all out making your meal, U'mishayir ba davar muat. But don't, whenever you prepare a meal, don't prepare everything. Leave something off the table. What delicacy should you leave off the table? Amar HaPapa, Kasa Daharnasa. I know this is going to disappoint many of you. Fish hash. What does fish hash mean? They used to take the kishkas of the fish, mix it with oil and flour, and fry it up. I know, you're going to miss it at your table. But again, so the Chazal is saying, leave this off. Leave this off. Now, this is just an example. What it's saying is that even when you set your table and you prepare delicacies, in the time of the Churban, we leave something off. By the way, the one exception to this rule is? Seder night. The halach is Bailel HaSeder. Bailel HaSeder, one is permitted to put all of their beautiful dishes, other things on the table, right? That's the one. And the reason for that on Leil Seder is why? Because Chirus, everything is about freedom. Everything is about emancipation. That's the one exception. But other than Leil HaSeder, even Shabbos, even Yom Tov, we always leave something off. We always leave something off. Again, Zecher L'Churban. What else? Amar HaPapa, Ose Isha, Kol Tach Shitel. A woman could adorn herself with all different types of ornaments, right? Umishayeres Dever Muat. But she should go ahead and leave off one piece of jewelry. Maihi, what should she leave off? Amarav Bas Tzad'o, Shine Emar Imesh. So again, basado. So here, the Gemara Rashi understands that it's talking about a kala, that a kala miskashetes bechof dalet kishutin. There were 24 different types of jewelry or ornaments that a kala used to wear, and in the aftermath of the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, she would leave off something. This basado. So basado could either mean, there are different opinions. Some say it was some type of tiara that a kala used to wear, or something, some ornament that she used to wear by her temples. Either way, there was something that they left off. So what is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? What's come down there amongst all of these things? What are we doing? What are we doing? We are diminishing. We're leaving something out. We are diminishing our external displays of joy. So what we're taking over here is, beforehand, my table would look like X. I'd have everything out. Now, I'm going to leave something off. Before, my home was perfect. Now my home is going to be imperfect. Before, the kala was going to wear everything. Now she's going to leave one thing off. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is advocating. Now, here's what's amazing. He's telling us to do what? What is he telling us to do? Build your homes. Have your beautiful seudas. Adorn the kala with all the beautiful kishutin. But hold back just a little bit. Hold back just a little bit. So let's see what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So what's the machlokis in the Prushim Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? What's the machlokis? The Prushim are telling us to what? Don't live. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying, live, but hold back a little bit. Live, but recognize, move forward, but recognize what you've lost. See, the Prushim are saying, live in the loss. Live in the loss. The problem, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, if you live in the loss, you don't move anywhere. Rabbi Yochanan, see, here's what, I'll say it like this. The Prushim are saying, live in the loss. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying, live with the loss. Don't live in the loss, live with the loss. And by the way, you understand the profundity of this? Because this, by the way, is not just a machlokes about how you deal with the churban. It's a machlokes how you deal with personal churban as well. We all suffer loss in life. Loss in different ways. You know, loss doesn't always mean death. Sometimes people have a loss of dreams, a loss of aspirations, a loss of opportunities. How do you deal with loss? The Prushim model is live in the loss. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's model is live with the loss. You have to continue forward. You have to move forward. But you always take that pain of your losses, or in this case, the churban, with you. With this, we'll stop. He says, "Shene emar emeshkachich Yerushalayim tishkach yemini." So this is amazing. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai just introduced to us the series of halachos that we put under the umbrella called Zecher l'churban. So this is amazing. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the author of the takanos, which are Zecher l'Churban. We have to live with the loss. We cannot go ahead and spend our lives in a state of aninus. We cannot spend our lives in a state of mourning. We cannot spend our lives just focusing on that which we have lost. We have to move forward. We have to figure out the way to live with loss, to take the pain with us, to take the mourning with us. Why do you have to take the mourning with you? Why can't you just let it go? Because remember, there's a power to the pain. Pain could be a very, very powerful thing. We're going to discuss this more in next week's class. In next class, and on Wednesday. But pain could be very powerful if channeled in the right way. Pain stokes the eager fires of eager anticipation. Pain stokes the fires of anticipatory excitement for what there is to come. Pain isn't always bad. Sometimes pain ultimately keeps alive within me the desire for something more. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai introduces us to the concept of Zecher l'Churban. Don't live in the pain, but live with the pain. We'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up on Wednesday.